The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 6. Going Home. She said goodbye to her mother at the mouth of the cave of Tenerum, crumbling under the weight of her sorrow and tears, and harboring guilt over feeling relieved when she finally stepped into its dark depths and its silence. Hecate was supposed to meet her and lead the way, but Persephone had walked that path so many times she really didn't need the dark goddess to guide her. She grabbed a lit torch from the wall and started her descent, feeling a little spacey and out of reality, and wondered whether this is how all those postulants she appeared to in dreams must have felt. The path looked the same as theirs too, something she had never noticed before, careful as she was not to fall behind Hecate's quick stride. Everything was dark and quiet, so quiet. She'd forgotten how still the underworld could be, compared to the world of the living, where the noise never ceased, not even in solitude. The narrow path swept between large rock formations, who had been shaped and carved by underground streams, and their constant flow had covered them in rainbow layers of reds, ochres, blues, and whites, almost like somebody had painted them on purpose. The path was covered in soft silt. Persephone had to guess this narrow tunnel must have been a riverbed at some point, which now dried up. Its silky consistency cradled her feet without a sound, making her footsteps softer than those of a cat. She was so focused on her journey, careful not to hit her head on the low stalactites, she didn't see him standing there in a hollow, watching her with a beaming smile. Hades loved to watch Persephone when the latter didn't know he was there, happy to be the secret witness of her solitude, or her most mundane activities. He watched her like one would a flower, from a distance, careful not to interfere with its unfolding, marveling at the softness of its petals, and its lovely burden of morning dew, guarding it jealously to allow it to remain unharmed by the careless fingers of the dunces who weren't able to appreciate its wonder. She finally saw him and her smile lit up the dark cave and filled it with happiness before she jumped in his arms. "I wanted to surprise you," he kissed her cheek, pleased by her reaction. Her skin was cool, soft, and fragrant under his lips, and reminded him of tuberose petals. He was never at ease with these yearly trips, always wondering whether she wasn't happier in the world, and if her return to his side wasn't guided more by commitment and obligation than by love. Fortunately for him, one look in Persephone's eyes reassured him that was definitely not the case. His body relaxed, and he took the torch from his wife's hand to light up the rest of the way. "Merry meet again, wife," he bid her welcome, feeling a bit awkward for having to greet his own spouse like she was a stranger, visiting. "I love you too, Hades," she answered his unspoken statement, and followed in his footsteps on the path which had started widening, until it opened into an enormous cave, with columnar stalactites, whose sparkling amethyst crystals gleamed in the light of the torch in bright yellow and violet hues, like a stone forest. The cave was so tall she couldn't see the ceiling, and the soft silt of the riverbed had been replaced with citrine pebbles. She knew the underworld very well and was sure she'd never been in this crystal cathedral before. "It's brand new," Hades whispered, pleased she loved his gift, and then brought the conversation back to more practical subjects, as not to get carried away by emotion. "How many this time?"
116,
she replied. They'd had this conversation before so many times the specifics of it went without saying. "What on earth are they doing to these people? You bring back more and more every year. How are you coping with the load?"
"Not too much strain, I hope."
He didn't wait for her answer, just reassured her they'd reach the Lethe soon enough, so she could deliver her spiritual passengers to its peace-giving waters.
"And how is your mother?"
"Well, I hope," he asked, politely. "She's always fine, as you well know, my love, and sends her good wishes," Persephone added from herself. She was sure her mother would have sent her kind greetings to her husband should she have remembered to do so.
"You are a perfect diplomat," he couldn't help an ironic laugh. "How lucky am I to have such a wise queen by my side?"
"I should involve you in war strategies," he continued. "Anyone who can mend that bridge, I can at least try, can't I?"
Persephone looked dejected.
"What happened in my absence? I missed my home so much. How are my gardens?"
"You also missed your husband, one hopes," Hades commented with a slight tinge of jealousy.
"Only every day," Persephone replied.
I wanted us to have a few moments alone before the festivities. Once we reach Hades, there won't be a moment's peace until all the pomp and pageantry is over. As if summoned, the Erinyes landed at their feet and prostrated themselves with their dark wings stretched out on the ground. Welcome home, mistress. Thou whom the Moiri favored beyond measure with a most fortunate marriage, Persephone tried very hard not to laugh. Hades had a wicked sense of humor and liked to amuse himself by programming random bits of bizarre weirdness into the dwellers of the lower realms, just to watch her puzzled expression when the latter mindlessly delivered his messages. You can get up now, she smiled at the winged goddesses, who rose to their feet, satisfied their queen had shown them favor. What news, children? The world never runs out of wrong doors, mistress. We're carrying out our tasks as the gods commanded. And you never fail in your duties. Persephone never missed the opportunity to offer praise. She'd seen her share of despots and tyrants, being in such close proximity to the Tartarus, and learned a wise lesson. All the power-hungry warlords of the world thought subjects were easily controlled with deprivation, hatred, and fear, and they all failed to garner the esteem they so greedily coveted and instead ended up thickening the ranks of Tartarus, where they received the full measure of their own torments. No being, no matter its station, ever forgives being treated as worthless, and having its work mocked and taken for granted. Thank you, mistress, the leader of the Erinyes replied. Did you bring us any assignments from your journey? All in due time, Persephone nodded. We'll discuss this at length tomorrow. Now I'm sure everybody is looking forward to the feast. What feast? Hades faked surprise. That one over there, one thinks, my sweet, Persephone pointed to a green valley inside her grove where an army of servants was setting the tables for an elaborate banquet. Large trellises overshadowed the tables, with their thick ebony beams covered in grapevine and ivy, and huge golden platters of figs, pomegranates, and grapes already lay on the table, among flower garlands and next to bowls filled with honey and ambrosia, and she could see Hebe wandering around, giving orders and straightening up details. Evidently, the goddess of youth had been brought special from Olympus to pour nectar for the tonic gods. Around the tables, the trees of her orchards were bending under the weight of ripening fruit, whose honeyed scent reached her from afar, the smell of sweet figs, plums, and apples, mixed with the delicious sugary aroma of turning grape leaves. There was a special vibration in the air, which passed through her like lightning, and she guessed the muses must be nearby, to remind her how much she enjoyed working on her painting and her poetry, and leading in the dances, and she thought Hades had spared no effort in ensuring his lovely bride would be thrilled to be back home. The rhythms of joyous music rose from the valley, where the sounds of the flutes, the lyres, and the bendirs filled the air, and she could hear the laughter and joyful banter of the nymphs, who chased each other through the orchards, filled with the boundless energy of youth. The realm of the underworld lived in perpetual twilight, not the dim light that accompanies the day's descent into the night, but the glorious time of sunset, when the firmament is painted rose and purple and canary yellow, and all the clouds turn pastel colors and try to outdo each other, in a game of sky painting which yields colorful striped swirls and looks like a giant fruit nougat. Persephone remembered that in the agitation of her departure she didn't think of eating anything, and she was ravenous, a reality which the sight of the feast in the distance amplified to epic levels. Good grief. I told them to set the tables on the other side of the grove. Now the surprise is completely ruined, Hades complained. When we get there, you can offer me a glass of water from the Lethe and I'll be as surprised as you want me to be, Persephone smiled impishly. They ruined you up there in the living world, he mock-sighed. Where is my innocent and guileless bride? Why does everyone mourn my no longer being an idiot? I'm starting to worry about that, Persephone asked herself silently. I can hear you, you know, Hades replied. Here, have some of this, you need to keep your strength, he offered her a pomegranate, opening it first to expose the seeds. Pomegranate, my love? She laughed. Do you have a problem with that? Hades frowned. Not in the least. She grabbed the fruit from his hands and started munching eagerly. By the gods, I was starving, she took a deep breath after the first half of the fruit had started settling her stomach. I had a feeling about that, he mumbled under his breath.